Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Into it however we want. I mean, you know, at some point it's going to have to be the start of the recording. So, this is the start of the recording. This is the Just Us League. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott. Like 5 minutes ago, we were just talking about crisps and I was scared that was going to be the introduction. So, honestly, I'm pleased you cut that bit out.
I mean, you know, I'll still put the question out there. Anybody who's listening to this, come find us on social media. Let us know your favorite crisps. We're sort of highlighting Doritos and Quavers, which is a massive disparity between the crisps, I would have said. Quavers is, that's a C tier for me. I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know, man. Like, you couldn't get, you know, further apart on the crisp spectrum. Mm. But is there something about, like, Quavers are moorish, man. Like, I could eat, like, 10 bags of Quavers and just keep on going. Same with Skips, same with Wotsits. All of those, like, weirdly flaky ones.
They're all, like, a bit fuzzy. They're all a bit, like, foamy. I don't know what that texture is. But they're just...
The teeth fuzz, you know? Like, you eat too much of them and you kind of feel like... Your mouth has a coat on it, you know.
That's what I hate. It's like I'm sort of coating my teeth. I don't bond slap the teeth. I can't take it. I don't want it. But also, this is an E3 podcast. We thought we would do some E3 rumors. It feels like E3. I don't know if you feel the same way, but it feels like E3 this year. It's just kind of there. Like it's just nebulously hovering around. And we know that it's going ahead. It's going to be this digital only event. But because there was so much back and forward, it just doesn't. One, it doesn't feel as important as it used to because every other company is now doing their own streaming stuff. You know, like Capcom doing a Resident Evil stream or whatever. It doesn't feel like we're waiting for announcements at E3 anymore. And then also because it is an all digital event, like it doesn't have, do you feel the same way that E3 itself has completely changed?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it seems like obviously, you know, they had a year off last year and they're coming back this year. Mm. But, you know, it's a month and a little bit out now. And I feel like we know very little about it. We know more about what's not happening there than what is. You know, we know Sony's not going to be there, for instance. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of like shrouded in mystery. And hopefully that's because they have something good and interesting up their sleeve. And that's what I'm kind of banking on. Because, you know, me and you are big lovers of the E3 experience.
Massive lovers.
You know, never been, but enjoy watching it from home. You know, it's like gamer Christmas, as we always say. So I'm hoping they can bring that energy back in a year that I think needs it.
I would totally agree. I mean, I think the weird little, we've talked about this quite a lot, but the weird little rumor that they had a couple of years ago about how they were going to revamp E3 before the sadness, before 2020, before all that, when they were going to go down the route of social chits and they were going to get loads of like celebrity voice people to be there. And it was going to be this whole weird thing where they said they were literally trying to manufacture FOMO and make sure, fear of missing out, and make sure people would want to be there. And it was horrible, to be honest. All that stuff sounded really horrible, fake, studio-y, market-y, corporate-y. And I don't know how much of that's going to be in the revamped version, but whatever. That was kind of the direction that the ESA were taking it.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. But I like E3 in the same way that I like the Oscars, which was last night. And I feel like both of those are occupying a kind of similar vibe where you know they're both happening this year, but like the Oscars just kind of like happened last night. It's like, oh,
I didn't even know
thing.
Until this morning, to be honest, about the Oscars. I was just like, things won some awards.
Like, yeah, totally. Yeah. A lot of good things won, but it kind of feels like, you know, as we're into this malaise at the moment, these big milestones kind of like just drop out of nowhere. And you're like, oh yeah, that thing's happening. But going back to what you were talking about, like social chits and how they're going to change the experience, make it more influencer driven, like on the surface, that sounds bad. That sounds something I don't want whatsoever. However, I do think the cringe is an integral part of the E3 experience, just as it is with the Oscars. Like, if the Oscars was fun and hip and actually, like, cool, that would not be cool to me. I wouldn't want it then. I want a bit of, like, weirdness. I want a bit of, like, this distance between me and the quote-unquote, like, Hollywood elite with all of this money. And, like, there's something in that.
What you can't do if it's digital though is like those times when the demos don't work. Like I just remember when Uncharted 4 just stopped working, the guy just stood there with the controller. And I remember when he was trying to walk off and he literally, his mic was still on and you heard him say, "What, are we trying again?" And he just went back out to like try it again. I was like, give me a whole show of that. But what was the name of that dude that was it Mr. Cool or something? The guy that went like the guy that used to work for Ubisoft. And he was like,
I cannot remember this.
He was standing on, someone will know this, he was standing on an E3 stage and he was like, oh, we'll do, he did transition. So he was like, over to, I don't know, Just Dance for the next sort of segment. And then he would go doodle doodle doo, and then it would like cut to them. And then he would come back out of it going doodle doodle doo. It sounds like I've lost my mind, but it was definitely a thing.
Made this man up. It sounds maybe, like you maybe know, it was Mr. Paperclip Caffeine. On Word. You know,
it might,
know
I think it's, I think it's actually Mr. Caffeine. I think I'm thinking of Mr. Okay. Caffeine, which is, I do also would like a cup of caffeine, but I think that's definitely what he is. But anyway, we should talk about the fact that we thought we would do some E3 rumors, because regardless of the fact that E3 feels like it's all over the place, there is still a chance of big things happening there. Now, it has been confirmed that Sony aren't going to be there for whatever reason. Sony's just on an island unto themselves at this point, but we're still going to be, Xbox and Nintendo are going to be there. There'll be all sorts of third parties and stuff that are already confirmed. It's over on the E3 website, but Sony are either not going to be there at all. I think they've officially said they're not going to be there. They did sort of...
Yeah, I think the ESA, the body behind E3, said like, you know, they didn't want to do it last year and it doesn't look like they're going to do it this year, so yeah, it seems like they're just not turning up again.
They're just not bothered. The PlayStation streams and stuff, I guess, you know, Jim Ryan's just doing it from the garage, man. I didn't care, just stick the camera on me. But so we've got, in terms of the sort of parameters that we're working with, for me, I went just down the Xbox Nintendo route. I was like, what would be the big headline stealers for them? But also, I'm going to open on something that is maybe potentially out of nowhere, something I didn't clear with you before we started recording, something that just could land and drop. And I feel like I've built it up a little bit too much, but ironically, that is what it is in reference to. It's Cyberpunk's return, mate. I think, what if E3 is the place that we get Cyberpunk 2.0, whatever the revamp is that they've clearly been working on. And we've also got the next-gen versions that need to come out, the PS5, the Xbox Series versions. I think that Cyberpunk, whatever the next vision of Cyberpunk is, arrives on the Xbox stage, because obviously it can't do Sony. Mm-hmm. Sony don't even care. It's not even for sale on the Sony store anymore. But they take advantage of the fact that they did a lot of pre-release stuff with Xbox anyway, and they do a big old CDPR Cyberpunk re-reveal on the Xbox stage or on the Xbox stream or whatever it is, showing the game running on Series X, showing it running on the high-end software possible, and confirming all the DLC packs, the DLC leaks, the add-ons and stuff. Show, you know, the gangs of Night City, the sort of like the different story stuff, maybe hint at the fact that it's all been fleshed out. Maybe they show a new life path or something like that, different ways that you can play it. Either way, I think they need an audience to care, and they can get so much of that from their own first party stream. So my first prediction is that Cyberpunk makes a big old splash.
I think that is bonkers. I think that is bonkers thinking, Scott Tilford, because a few things, you know, I do think they might come up and show the next gen versions, you know, if they have been in production, if they're going to drop, you know, it makes sense for them to show that off on like the Xbox stage or whatever at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to promise any content until they have proven they can deliver it. So I don't think we're going to hear about the DLCs properly or, you know, have a big look at what this game is going to be before they can, you know, win back some goodwill and prove that they're going to deliver on it. Because a huge part of why Cyberpunk failed outside of the bugs and stuff were these unrealistic expectations that it set with the marketing. You know, it came out and it was like, it's going to be this grand game. It's going to be GTA mixed with Witcher, mixed with Fallout, mixed with whatever. It's going to fulfill all your dreams. And obviously, it didn't. On the other hand, I also think it might be too soon for them to even have a Cyberpunk 2.0. I mean, they've been following it all year. They've dropped a few updates now, and it certainly is in a better position than it was, you know, last year, but they've still been dealing with a lot of pushbacks. Mm. Their roadmap, you know, didn't have anything until the end of the year now. I feel like, honestly, it might not be until... I think your prediction could be right, but I think it could be right for E3 2022, not 2021.
2025, when it's finally back on the Sony store. Yeah. I think for me, I mean, it was just whenever you talk about E3 stuff, I love the balmy, anything goes, the bonkers, as you said, predictions, because anything goes, anything can be real. New Silent Hill, who cares? It can be right there. And so if you think about something that feels like it's never going to happen, which is a fully running, next-gen, lovely, super stream, super smooth version of Cyberpunk, then that was something that I just pulled from the back of my mind, going like, well, what if? What if they do something? But at the same time, like you said, it's not like the average person even trusts their visuals anymore. If CDPR say this is the game running on next gen, everyone's just going to go, Is it though? Because you said this last time and then it's a complete mess again. So maybe the only way to recover Cyberpunk's reputation is to just drop updates for free and let people figure it out themselves. I don't know how the conversation happens between them and Sony, just saying like, because that has to be a phone call at some point saying it's actually okay now. Like, I don't know how the hell they get it back.
I mean, I'm sure, I can only half remember it, but I'm sure I saw like a news thing, a news post where they were talking about being in touch with Sony and being like, we're nearly there, we're nearly back in the store, we're having good conversations.
You can move the stick and the character moves. And look at the new shadows, we've got him running and everything.
It is mad that thing's still not on the store, man. Like, it is crazy.
That's mad. And also the fact that we mentioned like it's received a bunch of updates. Like there's they've kind of tweaked the police. They're not great. Follow-up album tweak the police. But in regards to like they've sort of done a few different patches and stuff, but the shadow is still broken. Everything else, like, you know, the most essential stuff, he still runs ridiculously. And it's just like, what?
Has he got any hair yet?
Hair? What, when he's in the shadow? I don't think
well,
so.
Well, at least for my character, my lass, she had like, you know, a little bob or whatever. But in the shadows, there was no hair to be seen. And, you know, she was just like just a silhouette.
Just a weird sort of bald silhouette mannequin thing running like they've been electrocuted. It's not good. But anyway, what was your first E3 prediction?
This is what I'm looking forward to, and I hope it happens. And that's a big Battlefield blowout. I think we're going to get the reveal sometime in May, because I think Battlefield 5 and Battlefield 1, they were both shown off. They had the first trailers dropped in May, but I think this is going to be the big centerpiece of the EA Play event that's happening, because, you know, they've been hyping up internally and in investor calls the next Battlefield for like what feels like ages now. You know, every single time they have an investor thing, you know, one of the CEOs, one of the executive comes out and assures that the shareholders that we've got Battlefield in the way, it's really good. But obviously, you know, they say these things to the money men, but they haven't actually really said much to the fans. And recently, the Battlefield Twitter has been teasing a bunch of stuff. And all of the rumors, Scott Tilford, point towards an interesting thing. And that's that the next Battlefield is going to be next-gen focused, which I think would be huge, because the other rumors on the other side of the field are that Call of Duty is not going to be next-gen focused. It will have a next-gen game, but apparently that's going to stay multi-platform for the next two installments. And that was the recent rumor. I think it was Tom Henderson who was maybe talking about that, if I might have got that wrong. Uh-huh. But yeah, the idea of like a next gen Battlefield, I think that will like turn heads so much. Like, I'm sure there will be a current gen version or a past gen version, but I think that'll be a port. That's what the rumors seem to suggest, that it'll be made by another team. It'll be more downsized. And I don't think we'll see that version at E3. I think we'll see, you know, full scale next gen Battlefield 6, and it'll blow everyone away, hopefully.
I just want things that run on the new systems. I know that it's exclusory or whatever to like past gen stuff, but at some point we need to move on. And at some point I want franchises like, I mean, the tech people like DICE who make gorgeous looking games. I want to see what that studio does with full access to an SSD and, you know, like the whole, all the hardware capabilities of the new systems. And like you said, that would totally turn heads. For me, Battlefield as an IP feels like it's just been gone for like, I don't even, when was the last time anyone cared about Battlefield? Like Battlefield 1? Like, I mean, I guess I cared about Battlefield 5 in the runner, but I feel like that game's reputation and everything just didn't, no one talked about it. It's totally solid, but like, I just feel like that the IP is just completely on the side. Like they have a lot of ground to make up at this point.
Well, I think that's why it's in an interesting position, because like you said, Battlefield 5 didn't really take. And I think that, you know, there's a desire to see Battlefield come back. There's a desire to see it come back in a big way. And because they have been silent for a long time, I do feel like there's still a lot of faith in what Battlefield 6 could be, especially if it's taking advantage of the next-gen hardware. Because, you know, you mentioned Battlefield 1. Like, people love that game. People really love Battlefield 4 for all of its launch problems. People really enjoyed Battlefield 3.
Give me them skyscrapers, mate. Give me them all day.
Exactly. Like, and I feel like, you know, again, the rumors point towards this next installment being a modern day game. And I feel like that worked for Call of Duty. It's been ages since we've had a modern day Battlefield. You know, we had World War II, we had World War I. So to come back to, you know, modern day, near future, go modern military, re-embrace kind of like the anarchy of the Battlefield 4 era, but, you know, blow it out to even more players, blow it out to even more destruction, you know, more interesting live service elements, because, you know, loot boxes and microtransactions aside, I think when it comes to first-person shooters and battle passes, I feel like they can add a lot of content in a way. You know, they can add a lot of customization. They can add a lot of free maps, free weapons, stuff like that. So I do think, you know, there's a desire for it to be good. There's a desire for it to come back. And as long as DICE and all of the other studios working on this game have done something, you know, that lives up to their previous work. I feel like, you know, now's the time for this
something with
franchise
lots of,
to come back.
Something with lots of levolution. That's what we, that's
I would
what we
like.
Need, the EA's old some buzzword. Levolution. I did see a rumor doing the rounds literally just this morning. It's not like, it's not verified remotely, but it was just doing the rounds on Reddit. I think we talked about it this morning, that the Battlefield might return to a more futuristic place as well, like set in 2030s or something, and it would be more like futuristic Battlefield, which it is kind of easy to forget that they have got that wing of the franchise. Like, there has been futuristic Battlefields before. Like, I like the idea of them sort of chasing the Titanfall Apex crowd. Like, maybe they've seen that take off so much, and then you can kind of do like a more futuristic one. Give me lasers, give me spaceships on a massive crazy scale with like 80 to 100 players. Like, that could be something that, like you said, turns heads. You know, you sort of come over the crest of a hill and you see a whole mess of different players all fighting each other, and you realize, oh, they're actually all real players. That's actually a whole war going on between these like massive groups of people, and it's all set in the future. I just want Titanfall 3, mate, to be honest. That's all. Like, just channel that through whatever you need to channel it. The next thing that I had down was Halo Infinite. I think that Microsoft will have something, they have to have something to say about Halo, or at least you would hope so. So my specific prediction is that we'll get a new specific date for Halo Infinite, towards the end of the year, maybe December or whatever. But they will also put out the free multiplayer that was rumored last year, because Phil Spencer did talk about that was something that they were going back and forward on, whether or not they should just put out the like multiplayer portion of the game for free back when the game was first delayed, and it would all run at 120 frames a second, whatever. It would at least give people something to play while they were waiting, and then they didn't because it wasn't polished enough or something. But I think because Joseph Staten, the original writer from the original trilogy, came in and he's remixing the campaign or whatever the hell he's doing, that'll be the thing that we get teased. Maybe they show something that sort of is tantalizing or whatever, but I think they'll put something out to satiate the masses and just go, hey, by the way, we're Xbox. That thing that's on, you know, the inside every Xbox, the little picture of Master Chief, that's what this is, and here's some Halo for you.
That would be cool, even if it's just like the beta for it, you know, it's like he's the free-to-play thing, he's the beta for it instantly, you know, go nuts, like give us some feedback, because I think that's what they've really done well since, you know, the project went tits up last year, you know, since then, and since, like you said, Joseph Staten's come back, like the studio in general has been so much more open about what they're working on. They've been releasing these big blog posts, these big documents chronicling all of the changes they're making, everything they're doing and stuff. So I do think, you know, unlike last time where they kind of came out with the trailer and then eventually they had to respond to the feedback, I wonder whether they're more proactive about it this time, like you said, whether they're just like, he's a portion of the game, you know, it's still in development, you know, it's still free to play or whatever. We can make changes, but hope you enjoy it. You know, let us know, you know,
They've got this insane player base for Game Pass now that they didn't have even this time last year, where it's over 20 million people have Game Pass. So it's like, if you put out, you know, Halo Infinite free multiplayer, whatever you want to call it, this sort of free to play thing that's 120 frames a second, because they did update the Master Chief Collection so that it all runs 4K 60 and it's like, well, 4K 120 and it's like, it's really gorgeous. You know, you put the Halo Infinite multiplayer out to that player base, and maybe, I don't know how fast you can bring these things around. It's probably way too short a time frame, but you could do some sort of live event type thing that leads into the Halo Infinite story, and do something that preps that entire player base. Like, give them a reason to check out the return of Master Chief, because otherwise the story right now, like, it's nothing. Like, it's just sort of, he touches down on a different planet and everything's just reset. He's got his old school armor on. It's a little bit like Silent Cartographer, and kind of just go from there. It was only over the weekend when I was looking into the villain that showed in the first trailer. He's called Esharam or Asharam. Yeah. Dude works for Atriox, who's like this big brute, Giralnahe, whatever the species is that are the brutes. He works for him, who was in the Halo Wars games. And Halo Wars 2's main villain is Atriox, who's a really big deal. And Esharam works for him, and they're like, they're called the Banished, and they're this whole faction of Covenant that have broken off. And it's like, that's really cool stuff that is barely anywhere in the marketing that you've kind of got to
go forward
a bit. And I feel like there's a lot that they could do, like put the Banished into Halo Infinite's multiplayer. It's all proper wishlist stuff, but if they manage to get the multiplayer out there and have millions of people playing it, then there's a lot more options that free themselves up that could sort of factor into the single player. Maybe video games can be exciting on a AAA level again. I'm just saying.
Maybe. You know what? I'm for as done as I was with Halo, you know, last year, this time last year, I'm slowly getting one around to Infinite. And I feel like if they do something like that, if they have a really strong showing where they're, you know, perhaps a little bit candid about the trouble that they've been through, what they've done to change, but do that on like a big scale, the big E3 stage, rather than just in the blog post, which, you know, are still appreciated, but that will get the message out to people who don't read those blog posts, though, who aren't totally invested in the fandom and are more casual fans. And the more I hear about it, the more I feel like they're really righting the ship. And I hope that pays off with, you know, another grand re-reveal that shows how this hard work has kind of like paid off.
Yeah, it's a weird like cross-generational thing with Halo where like me and you are in, or we're invested in the original trilogy. Me and you are the flying the flag for Halo 4. Definitely. And even mostly the way 5 plays, but not necessarily the story and stuff. But you've also got that crossover to like newer fans and how do you appeal to them? And like, I think it's a weird uphill battle, but it's like the love is there for Halo. Like we want to see Halo do well. So it's like do something that, you know, satiates that fandom. What was your next one, or should I dive into Alan?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Thanks.
I think my next one was, Scott Aylford, that Bioshock 4 will finally be properly unveiled, because it has been formally announced. Like, 2K has come out and said, we're doing another Bioshock, we're hiring for another Bioshock. But it was like in a blog post with nary even like a logo for anything.
Like, it's a whole new team, Cloud Chamber. Like, what even is that?
Like, they've got a whole new team. They've been working on it for like a good few years now. So I feel like we might not get a substantial look at gameplay or anything, but I do feel like we'll get a proper teaser trailer and maybe the first look at the location, whether that's going back to Rapture, whether that's doing something new. I just feel like, you know, it's kind of time for it, because it's for the longest time it was the gaming industry's worst kept secret, and then it was just kind of like this weird footnote that 2K put out. And I think if you want to kind of like start building hype, even if it is maybe a year, maybe two, maybe even 3 years away, I think you can get out now and start like building that back up, because Bioshock's been gone for so long now, but there's still people who love it. And I feel like, you know, if you can build that hype back up, put confidence in the new team, and then, you know, deliver hopefully something special, I think.
Do you know what's a horrifying realization? That Bioshock Infinite is almost a decade old. That was 2013.
It is.
That's that's bad. That's a bad thing to think. But I mean, it has been away long enough that the love is still there whenever anyone mentions it. But Ken Levine, also completely AWOL for almost a decade, apparently working on some weird narrative branching thing. I don't think he's done anything since then.
I don't think he has. That was like again, that was almost a decade ago as well. And I don't know what happened with that project either. Yeah. It was a weird fallout after that, because obviously Bioshock Infinite, you know, even though it had its detractors, you know, it was one of the most best. I'm doing really well
top
in that word.
Most best.
One of the top most best reviewed games of like that entire generation, you know, and it sold really well. People still enjoyed it for the most part. And then it was like, nah, no more Bioshock. You can have the remasters and that's it.
It is a bit weird because, I mean, it is 2K at the top as well, who are known for just going like, we don't care about artistic integrity, just give me another one. And like that was kind of the case with 2. And I know Levine sort of passed on that, came back for Infinite. But yeah, for 4, do you think that, like, what do you, because I think you like Bioshock overall way more than me. Like, I don't mind them. I've kind of like, I've played through them and I like them fine. But I was one of those detractors for Infinite. I thought it was just a mess. I thought it was all over the place. But what would you want from a 4? Like, do you want them to do anything that is in regards to Rapture, Columbia, or do you think break away from it altogether?
Well, that's it. I don't know what I want, but I know what I don't want. And for as much as I love Rapture, I don't want them necessarily to go back to it, because I feel like that entire location, that entire story, even though there's still so much rich lore that you could explore, I feel like we've explored it to death. You know, we had Bioshock 1, we had Bioshock 2, and then we had the DLC for Infinite, which connected. Den, yeah. And went back to... Minerva's Den was the one for
that
2.
That was on 2, I thought it was... Yeah.
And then, Infinite still went back to it, you know, and it was still... went back and kind of like wrapped that story up for me. And I feel like, you know, they are in a kind of difficult position because, you know, we've talked before about how Infinite just sort of, you know, drew attention to the construction of Bioshock's world. You know, there's always going to be a man, there's always going to be a lighthouse. You know, it kind of covered every potential sequel.
Like Levine just going like, I'm out after this and I'm literally going to show you how the sausage is made so that you don't care about the sausage anymore. And I've taken my sausage and ran, and I'm making another one over here. And that was such a weird... beat, like, to display, there's always a lighthouse, there's always a man, or whatever, it was always a city, and just sort of saying like there is a reality. It's almost addressing the marketing whims of 2K, of just saying like, oh, they'll always, it's infinite, there will always be more Bioshock going forward, but I'm also leaving, but this is the reality of it. I thought that was in a way genius, but also kind of makes it very hard for anyone else to follow up and give it any sense of the same authority.
It does. And I think you almost kind of perhaps have to veer away from that if you're doing a follow-up. You know, he's made that meta comment and, you know, we all appreciate it. But it doesn't necessarily mean that those stories about whatever man there is, whatever lighthouse there is, aren't worth telling. You know, it just kind of like addresses them on this kind of like giant level, whereas you can still have interesting stories. Who else, you know, turns up at these lighthouses? Who else has these kind of interactions with these, you know, fantastical new locations and worlds and stuff? I just hope it retains that kind of element of savviness that the original 3 had, to be fair. Yeah. 2 had it.
The thing that I really want is a decent explanation for why a populace has powers. Like, I feel like they nailed that in Bioshock 1 and 2, like that it was this scientific or this sort of knowledgeable academic community that got carried away and they all started experimenting on themselves with the plasmids. And then in Infinite, it was just, they're just tonics and they're just available everywhere. And it's like, when you take one, you freak out and see fire everywhere, but that's what everyone's doing. And I was just like, this doesn't, for me, that made no sense. Like, everyone's just like casually having a pint of something that lets them control the birds or, like, you know, conjure some fire. And I was just like, this, for me, I'd never got on board with any of that. I felt like Rapture's explanation of the superpowers made more sense. But I feel like if you're going to break away, then you need another way, you need another explanation for plasmids or for the tonics or something like that. Some other way that it makes contextual sense. We can always revisit that, because I think, were you totally fine with that way that they went in Infinite with that stuff?
I was, you know, not to like drag the point on too much, but like in Infinite, I thought, obviously, you know, so much of the technology and, you know, the magical plasmid sort of side of it.
A big old floating city.
Yeah, big old floating city. Like, a lot of that was informed because, you know, like the characters literally could see through dimensions and could see what Rapture had done and then kind of like retrofit it. So I kind of like that a lot of like the tech was kind of, you know, they could see glimpses of this alternate dimension where someone had achieved this. And then they're kind of like figuring out how to both profit from it and then also make it their own, you know, apply it with the stuff that they were already working on. I thought that was like a fascinating little, you know, thread that was really good about how Rapture and stuff informed it. But
I totally back that. The explanation is great, like the whole explanation behind Songbird, the connection to the Big Daddies and everything, that stuff was so solid. I was just looking at that sort of quaint, weird, flying racist society that are just downing tonics and, like I said, like sort of turning into birds and stuff, but not all of them are doing it. Only like it just felt really weird for that, just the reality of that sort of place. My final rumor is just it's nigh on confirmed, but Nintendo themselves won't say it, that the new Switch will be shown off, because maybe they're waiting for an E3 to do this. But I feel like the new Switch is going to be shown off. It's been rumored, it's been leaked, it's been detailed, but Nintendo themselves won't talk about it. But I think they'll show it off with a sizzle reel of Metroid Prime 4, because that thing restarted development as of 2 or 3-ish years ago. You need a big game that is sort of big whiz bang first person shooter. Well, it's not a first person shooter, you know, if it's a proper Metroid, but I feel like it's that perspective it can show it off. And Breath of the Wild 2, or whatever they're going to be calling the next Breath of the Wild. Because I feel like, you know, we're coming up on the usual 2 or 3 year cycle on a Zelda game, and it's time. Like, it's either going to be delayed or whatever, but I feel like they'll have something to show. Like, we know that they were already working on the cutscenes when they revealed it. So I just feel like if you need something to make a big splash alongside the new Switch and convince people to buy it, if it is also the 4K 60 system, then, you know, something like a new Zelda, like maybe the new powers that Link has or whatever, or the way that Metroid Prime moves would be something that shows off that new capability in a way that, you know, just doing another Splatoon 3 trailer maybe won't. What's your thoughts on the new Switch? Like, do you see yourself getting one? I've said a bunch of times that mine is broken. Mine just goes all the time. It's not good at all.
I would get it for Breath of the Wild 2 and Metroid Prime. Mm. If they announced it and then announced that those were, you know, coming within the first year or whatever, I would definitely get one.
Bayonetta 3 as well, throwing that in.
Doesn't do much for me. The old
doesn't
Bayonet
do much for
series.
Me, but it's a thing. It's a thing that's been on the table since 2017, I believe. And even the creative director just said, "Stop asking me about it." It's like, no, you said this was coming, mate. Like, what are you talking about?
I think if you get those three games, man, like, that's a good showing. And you know, everyone was kind of disappointed when they did the direct earlier this year that you know, they came out and they were like, "Look, there's not going to be any Breath of the Wild 2 information here, buddy. You're gonna have to wait for that stuff." And I think we might get a big Zelda blowout alongside this, you know, because there are rumors that there are a bunch of other remasters or ports coming for previous games.
Still
the series, so I think. Yeah, exactly. So I think if you know, come out with those ports and then build up to also Breath of the Wild 2 is coming, and also it's on this new machine we got for you, like, that could be a home run if they pull it off. But it's Nintendo, so they probably won't.
No, I know. If anything, they'll probably make it worse, make it available for a month and then take it away again. I was just thinking, if they did another version of Wind Waker, because that was Wind Waker HD when it got re-released on the Wii, they could do Wind Waker 4K, they could do Twilight Princess 4K, you could do all these sort of like fancy versions. But all of it right now is still up in the air, even though you can go online and read ostensibly the full specs of the new Switch, because they're just out there, confirmed by Bloomberg and everything. But Nintendo themselves are just still putting their finger to their lips going, I don't know, maybe it's a thing. It's like, it's definitely a thing, lads. You're probably better off just addressing it. What was your final rumor/prediction, sir?
My final one, I think, was Starfield being shown at Microsoft's event. You know, it's going to be a full exclusive for one, but it's not going to come out this year, I don't think. I think this year is too optimistic, but I feel like Microsoft has paid all this money, and I originally had, you know, them actually not showing it, but then I remembered, like, with the recent acquisition, I don't think Bethesda would have shown it, but now that Microsoft has bought them, I feel like Starfield is the game everyone's looking forward to. It's a game that's presumably quite along in development now, so I do think they'll have something that will stake their claim in it, and I think that will be full exclusivity, and I think it'll be a vague announcement of a release date, perhaps. I think it'll be the first half of next year, but then in my head, I think it's going to get pushed. That's my mad thing about it.
It will be Game Pass exclusive, to coin a term.
I think it'll be on Game Pass day one.
Because that was the thing, picking apart the absolute noodle pile of thoughts that was Phil Spencer trying to explain how Xbox exclusivity works. And he just said it's exclusive to everywhere that Game Pass is available. So it's like, okay, but that, like, I get that could be a Game Pass exclusive, kind of means Xbox, but also means PC. And then, but at some point, they need to almost go back on the stuff that they said about everything being available up and down a family of consoles, because at some point they need to lock it to the new systems. And it's not like, I mean, right now, Bethesda could really do with a technical win. They could do with something that shows off what they can do, just as a team of coders, because I feel like they've really not had that in a long time. They used to be that PC first team that were, look what Bethesda can do. Look at these intricate clockwork worlds and everything. And I feel like that's just bit them in the behind over the years, because they've not kept up with that reputation. Like, if anything, now they're known as the weird, they're just, everything is a bug, everyone's flying up in the air, they take advantage of modders and that kind of thing. And I think that, you know, if they locked off the old systems and just said, look, it's a Series X exclusive or something like that, kind of like Avowed seems to be, then you have so much more to play with going forward. I don't know where I stand. I'm very much give me the new stuff. I don't you know, do something different for a different system. What's your thoughts on committing to, like, locking off old systems and letting a team like Bethesda just go with the new stuff?
Yeah, I do agree. Like like Jim Ryan once said, do believe in generations to the point. And I think obviously it makes sense to have a transitional period at first where you're having a bunch of different cross releases and stuff. But ultimately, it's totally fine to have a few big games be next gen exclusive, because then they're making the most of the technology. They're not having to rush out a bunch of different SKUs or anything like that. Mm. And with Starfield, I do wonder whether that's going to be a full next gen game, or whether they're going to have this kind of like cross-gen release where it's still working on old hardware or whatever. But yeah, I would love it if they came out with like, it's next-gen exclusive, it's a big leap forward from Fallout 4's tech or whatever. Like, that's what I need from Bethesda right
They need now. A new engine. I feel like, because Todd Howard already said it's running on the Starfield is running on the Elder Scrolls 6 engine, which is also the he was just, oh, the modders love that engine, so we're going to stick with it. I hope he's reconsidered that since Fallout 76, because it's just like, you guys need a new engine. Like, I get that it's a business sense to, like, you know, get X number of sequels from the same piece of tech or hardware, but or software rather. But it's at some point, I think it's Bethesda. Like, you guys should be the top. You should be up there with Naughty Dog and Rockstar, with like some of the most polished games ever. It shouldn't be this weird half mod situation where it always feels like you're playing something that is forever awaiting a patch that never comes. I'm curious, optimistic in terms of the game itself. Do you feel like, because they've never done like a sci-fi thing, this is their first new IP in 20 plus years or whatever, do you think it'll still be the same first person like Fallout, Elder Scrolls style stuff? Like, that's just become their signature at this point.
Yeah, I think it'll be, you know, distinctly Bethesda and how it plays. I just imagine it will be, you know, adapted to a sci-fi setting, and I'm all right with that. I quite like the way that those Bethesda games play, even if a bunch of other RPGs have kind of came on leaps and bounds and give us more mechanically rich or mechanically satisfying experiences. Like, there's something to the, I thought Fallout 4 played really well. You know, like, the shooting was far crisper than ever was. Like,
it's because it apparently helped or something.
Yeah, it came in and sort of helped them tweak it up. You know, I felt like you were part of the world a bit more. You had more weight, you had more presence. And ultimately, I thought, even though it was not the leap forward a lot of people wanted, I thought Fallout 4 looked quite interesting as well. Like, visually, had a couple of bells and whistles that I thought were cool. Mm-hmm. So if they, you know, stuck with the format that works, I think that will be fine. What I want to see, though, is more depth in the RPG elements. I don't want them to streamline it even more than Fallout 4.
If it has a sarcasm button, we're running for the hills.
Yeah, totally. I don't think they'll do that again just because of how much backlash that got. But I mean, in other areas as well, you know, I want the quests to be more diverse, have more options, have more nuance. Don't just give us these kind of basic choices. You know, I think we're beyond that in an RPG space. After, you know, after we had New Vegas like 10 years ago, after we've had Disco Elysium, you know, recently, I feel like you can't just give us the classic Bethesda binary choice.
Just as you said that, with New Vegas being that old, Skyrim's a decade old as well. I'm just realizing all these things in the middle of this podcast. Just, I mean, this is an audio only thing, but my eyes went very wide there realizing that Skyrim is a decade old. I wonder if they might tie that in actually with like an Elder Scrolls announcement or something as well. Like, if you have to do big reasons to invest in Microsoft, invest in Xbox going forward, and you have Bethesda under your wing, then maybe you do an Elder Scrolls update as well. Have a Bethesda portion of the Xbox stream.
I've just thought of something, right? What if they do a 10th anniversary Skyrim re-release remaster?
Probably.
But it's exclusive initially for like 90 days or something on Game Pass, and then it comes to everywhere else, maybe.
Makes sense. I mean, it's a meme now how many times they've remade, remastered, reported Skyrim. But why not? I mean, it's a 10-year anniversary. That's one of the only times you can get away with it. And then you've got to wait until 25 to maybe do it again. But yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. I'm just waiting for Microsoft / Xbox to pull the trigger on Bethesda, on Xbox exclusive Bethesda stuff. I feel like once that opens, it'll be full on torrents, Jack Torrents of infinite things being applied to the Xbox brand. Because I just feel like they spent so much money, and I feel like everybody is over Phil Spencer's shoulders going, have you done it yet? Have you announced it yet? Have you told the world that we're locking everything down, because you keep dancing around it? But we all kind of like expect that to happen, the amount of money that that was put down on that deal. So yes, come find us on social media. Let us know what you think of the various E3 predictions, rumors, things that you want to see from the showcase. Coming in June, I believe it's June 13th. That's what it was the last couple of years. It'll be in June. Yeah. It'll be halfway Early through June. But yes, come find us. For now, I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye, Scott.
And we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.